Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Apples and Genos Fantasy Hockey Podcast. My name is Nacre Niblink. I'm the creator of Apples and Genos, originator of the Zero G Draft Strategy, and in this podcast, I'm going to go over the most puzzling players league-wide as submitted by the Apples and Genos Discord server. Let's get it. Welcome in. This is the last puzzling players of the 2023-24 fantasy season. We made it. We've gotten to the end. All my leagues are done. I'm feeling pretty good. It's hard not to feel good when you had a season like I had. I don't expect to have this kind of season every year by any stretch of the imagination, but I took home 3 championships in 4 leagues, so that is, I think I'll take that. That's a pretty good result. I didn't want to say too much on the podcast with Blake. If you listen to the flagship show already, you know, but I didn't want to say too much. I was all but assured going in through the podcast, seeing how the scores were going, all but assured in at least 2 of the leagues. Just the points leagues are a little bit more easy to predict, but the patron league, shout out to Mikos in the patron league. He gave me a run for my money for sure. It was very close in multiple categories, and then at the end I was able to like literally be like 1 ahead in a few categories, and that got me the W in the end. But yeah, 3 championships for me this year. I'll take that. Kakupful, I won in tier 3, which means I'm going to tier 1 next year, which should be awesome. I'm excited to play at a really high level there. Should be fun to do an auction draft. I'll have to brush up on my auction skills. It's been a few years since I did one of those. And then the Content Creators League, great league put on by the Fantasy Puck guys against a bunch of other content creators. Just had a blast in that league. Definitely some scoring settings that I felt could be exploited. Had a pretty good draft because of that, with some focus on that. And was able to ride it out all season, use the bye to my advantage. I think that one was a good one. Just in terms of like strategy from start to finish, I feel like that was a good showing for me. And then the Cats League, the Patron League is always one of the toughest leagues every single year. Big shout out to the Apples and Genos patrons. You guys know what you're about, that's for sure. And it doesn't help that you're all super tuned into all the players that I want to pick up every week. So shout out to all you guys. It was a great league this year, and I'm looking forward to next year already. We got Sash Lagarde in here. How's it going? Our Cats League's harder to win compared to Points League. Let's get to Biz. That's an interesting question. I don't know, to be honest with you. Like for myself personally, I think I'm a worse Categories League player than Points League player. Sometimes I feel like there's a little bit more variance in Categories Leagues because even if your players have great weeks, if they're only scoring goals or they're only getting assists, then even though they had a great week, that doesn't necessarily work out for you, because you could have, you could have way more assists than someone, but lose by like 1 goal. And then your overall team, it feels like they performed really well, but the way the categories are set up, it doesn't always work out that way. So maybe there's a little more variance to Categories Leagues in that regard. Depends obviously on the setup. You can do a lot of different things with setups that can help that out. But yeah, it's an interesting thought regardless. Definitely for myself, I think Categories Leagues are harder to win for me just because I think that I'm not as good at them. The way that I think and probably the way I approach the game doesn't lend itself as well to Category Leagues. And I'm still learning. I think one of the biggest things that we talk about all the time is that There's never a limit, right? You can always get better. You can learn something from how you played that year. Even in a year where I had a great year, where I won some championships, there are definitely things that I learned this year about fantasy That I think I'll take with me for next year, and I think I'll be better for it. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to dissecting all that. If this is the first year you've been listening to Apples and Genos, then you're definitely going to want to stick around through the off season. We'll be going through a full slate of, yeah, just episodes breaking down, our individual leagues, what we did right and wrong in our individual leagues to get the results that we did, things that we noticed that we can improve for next year, takeaways, all sorts of those kinds of things. Hopefully some fun stories about, all our terrible drop decisions, those superstars in the waiting that we dropped, trades that we made that blew up in our faces. All that will be in those episodes, so you want to stick around for that. And obviously we'll be going through some recaps of the different players that outperformed our expectations and what we should expect for them for next year, and players who underperformed expectations. We'll be doing a bunch of that as well. We'll be having tons of guests all off season. We'll be getting into some dynasty and rookie content as well. We'll get in some people who are absolute top of the line experts in those sorts of things to help you out with those. We're gonna have a full slate of off season content. We'll probably take a little break after the season is done here, recharge the batteries a little bit, but we want to get right back at it and get back to learning, which is what we do best here. One thing that I do want to mention before I get into it, I'm getting long-winded already, but before I get into the puzzling players, I do want to mention, if you are anywhere in the Toronto area, we are doing a meetup this year. We did it last year. There is, I think, five or six of us last year. Not too many of us, but we had a great time. We went to the Hockey Hall of Fame, had a drink, we went downtown. The Leafs, that happened to be the night that the Leafs won their first playoff round, John Tavares' overtime goal to send the Leafs to the second round. And so the city was electric that night. It was a great experience. And I don't know if it'll be quite that electric this time around, but I am hoping to meet lots of Apples and Genos listeners in Toronto. If you are in the area, then definitely hit me up. Make sure that you got my attention somehow. DM me on Twitter, leave a comment here on the YouTube video, DM me on Discord. I have a in the Discord server, I have a channel started for called Meetup 24, and I'm just kind of gauging in there who wants to join in, how many people might be coming out, and we can kind of make some plans accordingly. But either way, it's going to be a good time. I'm expecting, yeah, some people to come out. Hoping to meet some more faces, put some faces to all the names that we see in the Discord server every day. So hopefully a bunch of you can make it. That's going to be April 27th. Yeah, not sure exactly the time or the place just yet, but we'll definitely be meeting up somewhere in Toronto on that date. All right, we got Toronto Dave in here, hashtag 0G. You know how we do. And Ryan says, silly question, what's your favorite apple? I like that. I mean, a bit more backstory, I guess, to this. I don't know if anyone expected backstory to a favorite apple question, but when I was in high school and my first 3 years of going through university, I actually had this awesome summer job where I walked through orchards and vineyards and checked for diseases and bugs. So yeah, literally all summer I was like outside just walking up and down rows of trees and vines and just checking for bugs and diseases and taking notes. And yeah, basically doing, they call it scouting, pest management scouting is what I was doing. So I actually have a fair number of apples that I've been exposed to, different varieties. But honestly, I still think Honeycrisp is the best apple I've ever had. I know it's not like a super outlandish one. I think that's got to be my answer. I do love, like, Gala is a great apple. I'm not a super big fan of the green, tartier apples. I much more prefer like a juicy red apple. But yeah, I think Honeycrisp might still be my favorite apple. Cortland is a great one as well. I love a big Cortland apple. Anyway, we don't need to get too far into that, but we can definitely get into some puzzling players. Toronto Dave says, Honeycrisp, baby, you know how it is. Adrian Orange, Pink Lady apples are goat. I have never had a Pink Lady. I've heard some tales, but I have never had one. myself. How about them apples? It's a good question. Well, how about these apples? How about these puzzling players? It's 10 minutes in, and we are finally getting to the puzzling players. Thomas Hertl was the most widely requested player this week, and for good reason. We've got a terrific schedule for Vegas. Vegas, if you don't know, through this week 26 that we're looking at, which is this week and goes through into Thursday of next week, which I believe I will double-check myself, but yeah, Thursday is the 18th of April. So from today, Monday the 8th, through Thursday the 18th is week 26. If you're playing on Yahoo, I know a lot of people have their finals matchups going on right now. And Vegas has the best schedule by far. Six games played, all on off nights. It's a perfect schedule for Vegas. Most games played, and they're all on off nights. Terrific stuff. Thomas Hertl, obviously a trade deadline acquisition for the Vegas Golden Knights. So we haven't really seen what this is going to look like. If you're listening to the podcast on Tuesday, then you've got better information than I do as I'm recording this. You'll have already seen how the game here against the Canucks goes here later on Monday night. So maybe there's some stuff that comes out of this game that would change some things for me. But at the moment, what we do know is that it looks like Hertl is going to be on what looks like kind of a second line with Chandler Stephenson and Michael Amadio. And, you know, that's not the perfect line mates. I think I would have preferred to see him with Mantha. Mantha and Stephenson would probably be my ideal line mates for him, but they elected to keep William Karlsson between Mantha and Dorofiev, which was a line previously, so they elected not to break up that line. Makes some sense. What I'm really interested in is if Hertl gets on the top power play. I kind of suspect that he does, but that's really just a suspicion on my part, not really based in any intel that I've seen so far. Right now, or previously, I guess, the power play was Noah Hanifin actually taking over for Shea Theodore on the back end. We'll get to that. But Jonathan Marchessault, Jack Eichel, the mainstays, and then Chandler Stephenson and Ivan Barbashev were up there. I do think that there's room for Hertl to make his way into that power play in place of either Stephenson or Barbashev. And I think Hertl is probably just on sheer talent alone, clearly at least the third best player on this team behind Eichel and Marchessault. The real question for me is, what's he going to look like coming back off this injury? Was a bit more of a long-term injury, and sometimes you can see, you know, it's one thing to go to a new team, a new situation. We don't really know how many minutes he's going to get, if he's going to get power play one. But even assuming that he does get power play one in a healthy complement of minutes, say he's playing like, I don't know, 17 and a half, 18 minutes a night, including power play one, even if that happens, is he going to be effective? A, because he's in a new spot and it takes time to learn a new system, but also B, because he's coming off a longer-term injury. So there are definitely question marks. I'm not like over the moon about Hertl, but also like I think I still would prefer Hertl to Ivan Barbashev. I just think the ceiling's higher here. Barbashev has had some nice stretches, but he's definitely a limited player being propped up by his line mates in Marchessault and Eichel. If Hertl gets power play one, then I would comfortably take Hertl over Barbashev just on the basis of Hertl's past work. I think he's just proven, you know, obviously playing in San Jose, he hasn't had much to work with for a long time, but he's done a really good job there and been efficient even when the overall chances have not been there. He's been efficient with the chances that he has had. You know, he's had a solid shooting percentage in the past. He's never been a terrific shot producer, but quite honestly, he could do even better in terms of some of his efficiency numbers in my mind in Vegas. His ice time will almost certainly go down, right? This is a guy who is playing 19 to 20 plus minutes. Like this year for San Jose in 48 games, he averaged 20 minutes, 54 seconds. That's not happening here in Vegas behind a guy like Jack Eichel, who's the clear-cut top line guy. But I do think that there's a chance he gets 18, and then basically the efficiency that he could have could make up for some of the lack of ice time. So overall, I still think that there's a ceiling case here for Hertl to get back to being like a 65-ish point guy as a pace over these last six games for us here in the fantasy season, and then moving into next year as well. I'll be really interested to see what comes of this first game, but definitely I think he was well worth the swing because I do think he has a bigger upside than anybody else there in Vegas. Bravin is in the chat. Hey, Nate, wanted to get your thoughts on Blake Coleman. Worth streaming him over a power play two guy like Bukestad. So, yeah, Coleman was on the list, so we can get to Coleman right now. Coleman's got one goal in his last five games here. Has definitely cooled off after being red hot for a while there. Still averaging just under 17 minutes a night. 43rd in shots per 60, 9th in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60. So that's still happening for Blake Coleman here. Yeah, the on-ice numbers are not bad. 70th in Corsi 4 per 60, 60th in on-ice scoring chances 4 per 60. So we like that for Blake Coleman. The problem is twofold for me still with Blake Coleman. Like right now he's playing with Sharangovic and Backlund at even strength. Backlund is also extremely cold at the moment. And then he's not on the top power play. That's been Kadri, Huberto, Sharangovic, and Kuzmenko for the forwards. So that also kind of takes just a little bit of the potential, the point scoring potential away from a guy like Blake Coleman. Obviously, Coleman is a guy who can produce for you in other ways. And so you can look to his shots, you can look to his hits, you can look to even some blocks from time to time from a guy like Blake Coleman. But yeah, it goes back even further than five games. This is actually nine games where Blake Coleman only has a solitary goal to show for his point production. And so it's been a pretty rough go for Coleman. The underlying stats are still good. I still think he's a solid streamer. I'm not trying to move off him. You know, Calgary has a decent schedule here, and so you don't have to feel bad about that. They're playing six games, including four off nights, so you're going to get some use out of Blake Coleman, I feel like, in this week. Overall, I still think Coleman is a good stream, but I definitely don't think he's much more than that. The pace that he was on before, like he's still on the season on pace for 31 goals, 56 points. That feels a little rich to me, especially in terms of the goal scoring. I would more see Blake Coleman as like a 25 goal, 50 point guy. So it's just a little bit hot in terms of the goal scoring is where I'd have him. And, you know, that's kind of reflected in the 15.6% shooting percentage, which is a little high for a guy like Blake Coleman in my mind. Overall, yeah, Blake Coleman, great streamer. Would love to have him for this week. Calgary has a good schedule, but he's not really anything more than that to me. All right, let's keep rolling. Let's talk about Brock Nelson. One goal in his last five here. Yeah, it's another player that Blake and I have talked about a fair bit. And the underlying numbers are really starting to fall off with Nelson, which is a bit of the bigger concern for me. 133rd in shots per 60, 209th in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60, 219 in Corsi 4 per 60, and 218 in on-ice scoring chances, 4 per 60. The Lions have changed up for the Islanders. They've tried moving Nelson off the top power play, which is not a good look, obviously. And so I am a little bit concerned about Brock Nelson for that reason. And the other part of this is that the Islanders do not have a great schedule. They play three games, zero off nights in the first week of this week 26 matchup that you have. And then they do play two more games on the back end. These are both on off nights, but yeah, you have to get there, and it's really tough to keep rostering Brock Nelson when he's all on heavy nights, and you might be already thinking about benching him on those nights just given the recent stretch of play. And so I would not fault you if you've got better options. If you've got, like, I would make the move if I had to. If Brock Nelson was legitimately the guy I was going to be benching all week, I would make the move Nelson for Thomas Hertl for this week and just take those guys as a one-for-one swap. I don't think that's too crazy. And I mean, potentially you could pick him back up for the two off day games in the second part of week 26 if you had to. All right, Adam Henrique was the next requested player. Just one goal in his last five, skating 13 and a half minutes a night. 190th in shots per 60, 198th in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60. Really, what this comes down to for me with Henrique is he's not getting any exposure to Draisaitl and McDavid. You've heard me say it once, you've heard me say it 1,000 times. That's really all we're after with any of these Edmonton guys. He's been playing with Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and Warren Fogle on a line, what looks like a second line, I guess, there. But that's not good enough in my mind. I don't think Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is a guy who can really elevate a line on him by himself and really help out a guy like Henrique. And clearly Henrique is not really doing it by himself at this point. And yeah, 13 and a half minutes a night, like that's not enough to get it done. So all that being said, Edmonton does have a terrific schedule in the back part of this week. They go Wednesday, Friday off nights. They do play on the Saturday heavy night, but then they haven't come back with another three games, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, and the second half of week 26. Those are all off nights. So you're going to get a lot of games played out of Adam Henrique, and really it's just a matter of what can you like how much can you really expect from Henrique versus some other guy that you can probably get in for four games or you can get in for three games. I think there's real conversation to be had around what four games of Blake Coleman gives you versus five games of Adam Henrique. The exciting part about Henrique is there is always the chance that all of a sudden he's playing with Draisaitl and McDavid and he's just absolutely popping off. And so that's the little bit of the excitement you can get with a guy like Henrique is there is always that chance that the deployment changes and all of a sudden he's an absolute stud. So that can happen as well. All right, let's keep it rolling. Zemgus Girgensons. This was a Blake Creamer addition. He was out with an illness in the last game. He's been skating no minutes. This is, I think this is a, what would we call this? A prank puzzling player, a PPP. But yeah, Girgensons, if you're thinking about it, you're only thinking about it because he hits a fair bit. Yeah, I mean, you can grab him for that, but Buffalo doesn't have a good schedule. Three games, zero off nights in the first part of week 26 here. So yeah, I don't think anybody's sincerely thinking about going with Girgensons. Question that was asked here was to compare Brandon Montour and Zach Werenski. So Montour is somebody that we talked about and actually compared to Brent Burns on the flagship show. So you can check that out if you want to. But just to recap, Montour has just one goal in his last five, 24 minutes a night, 65th in shots per 60, but up there at 14th in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60, 8th amongst all defensemen, and Corsi 4 per 60, 23rd in on-ice scoring chances, 4 per 60. So the underlying numbers look fine there to me. The shots are a little down, but the scoring chances and shot attempts are up there. So that's all looking fine to me. But you compare it to a guy like Zach Werenski, who's got three goals, 6 points in his last five, skating almost 25 minutes a night. He's sixth in shots per 60, 89th in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60. But on the season, he's much higher than that. The on-ice numbers, not as kind to Werenski, obviously playing there in Columbus. 69th in Corsi, 4 per 60, which I guess is nice in a sense, but 151st in on-ice scoring chances, 4 per 60. Yeah, right now, I mean, well, who would you take, Werenski or Montour? Neither of them have a terrific schedule this week. Both play three games, zero off nights in the first part of the week here. And then going into the next part, they both only have one game. So you're only getting four games of either of these guys and only one off night in the last part of week 26. So the schedule is a wash between the two. I think you just go with the hot hand in Werenski, to be quite honest with you. I could see Montour absolutely popping off in these four games. That wouldn't shock me in the slightest. But I think in this particular instance, you just go with whoever is hot at the moment. We got Mike in the chat. Are these wide receivers or running backs? I don't know these guys. Fair enough. You may be on the on the wrong stream here. I love it. I love it when friends come and bomb my streams. It's a good time for everybody involved. Next up, we got Jordan Kyrou. He's got two goals, 5 points in his last five, skating almost 20 minutes a night, 12th in shots per 60, 26th in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60. That's good stuff from a guy like Jordan Kyrou. On-ice numbers are really solid too. 25th in Corsi, 4 per 60, 6th in on-ice scoring chances, 4 per 60. Been playing on a line with Brandon Saad and Pavel Buchnevich, which is kind of interesting. And then obviously on the top power play there as well. Yeah, I like Kyrou a lot. Obviously, it's been a good stretch for him. He's getting hot at the right moment. On pace now for a 28-goal, 66-point season. And St. Louis actually has a reasonable schedule here. They don't play till Wednesday, but then when they do play, they play Wednesday, Friday, Sunday, all on off nights for this week. And then in next week, the second part of week 26, they play on Wednesday again, which is also an off night. So you got a pretty solid four games that you're going to be able to fit Kyrou in, and it's not going to affect the rest of your lineup. And that's valuable in its own right. So yeah, I like Kyrou. I think he is a streaky player, but I mean, we're getting to the end of the season now. You see him up there, 57th in shots per 60 in the league on the season, 48th in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60. I think that's where we can realistically expect him to live. You know, if he had a little bit of better line mates for the entirety of the season, most of the season, he was playing with Thomas and Buchnevich and getting good exposure. But if he had played there for the entirety of the season, you might see a little bit more of a boost to these numbers. I will say, like an 11.3% shooting percentage. Usually Kyrou is a little bit better than that, and so you could expect him to do a little bit better in the goal scoring department in a slightly better season, a better variance season for a guy like Kyrou. You could see him get up into the 35 goal 70 point range. That wouldn't surprise me. That's probably roughly going to be my projection for him next year. We'll obviously see what the Blues do in the offseason before we really lock those takes in. But I like Kyrou the player. I do think he's, you know, he's a tier below. He's not a point per game player in my mind. He could have a season or two here or there where he does get some good variance and he hits that. But more likely a 70-ish point player is what you're going to get out of Kyrou year in and year out. And that would be my expectation for him for the rest of the season here as well. Valeri Nichushkin, he's coming back after being injured, playing 20 and a half minutes a night. So that's obviously solid. Not going to read too much into the underlying numbers in just two games back, but definitely it's a nice thing to have Nichushkin back in your lineup. What's not nice is to see that he comes back into the lineup on the second line. That's not what we want to see as Nichushkin managers for sure. But, and yeah, he has been on the top power play, but you also wonder if Rantanen is coming back sooner rather than later, which appears to be the trend, if Nichushkin is the guy who sticks or the guy who gets bumped off in favor of Jonathan Drouin and Arturi Lehkonen. I'm not sure, honestly, how to handicap that at the moment. I think it's really close amongst all these guys at the moment. Drouin's been very hot, so it's hard to see him coming off. Lehkonen has not been on this power play, but just got back on. Yeah, I think I would, if I had to put odds on it at the moment, I'd say it's probably 60% that Nichushkin stays on, 40% that Lehkonen stays on when Rantanen comes back. So that would be the way that I would handicap it at the moment. I think Drouin's done enough over this last little stretch to lock himself in for the foreseeable future. Moving on, we got Travis Konecny, 2 assists only in his last 5 games. Been a very reliable fantasy producer for the season. But yeah, just the 2 assists here in the last little bit. Last game was playing on a line with Scott Laughton, Joel Farabee. Joel Farabee's in a massive slump of his own. I mean, the Flyers in general are slumping pretty poorly at the moment. He's playing on the Tippett-Frost-Brink power play unit. Again, the Flyers are going to split those power play units fairly evenly, so take from that what you will. 139th in shots per 60, but 13th in shot attempts per 60. On-ice numbers look pretty good still. 26th in Corsi 4 per 60, 45th in on-ice scoring chances 4 per 60. On the season now, pacing out at 35 goals, 74.82 game pace. And I think that, you know, this is probably who Konecny is. He's probably had a little bit of this regression coming to him after being pretty hot for a lot of the season. So this isn't totally unexpected. The underlying numbers still look solid. I'm not going to get too bent out of shape over the 139th in shots per 60. That is probably just some bad variance on shot attempts going wide or hitting posts or what have you. Overall, I'm not that concerned about Konecny. He's still skating 20 and a half minutes a night. Torts absolutely loves this guy. One of the few guys that Torts seems to never get sick of. So overall, I'm unconcerned about Konecny. I think he's an everyday lock in your lineup, regardless of this recent cold stretch. Shane Wright was requested, and that is an interesting one because Shane Wright has 3 goals, 4 points in his 3 games with the Seattle Kraken here. It's been a journey with Shane Wright, that's for sure. From being a very highly, much ballyhooed prospect coming into the league, slipped a little bit in the draft from where people thought he would go, then goes to Seattle, has a bit of an embattled season last year, has really just not burst the door down at any point. But Yeah, he comes in, he gets a goal in his first game back in the Seattle lineup against San Jose, has four shots. Then he goes and plays LA in the next game and has just a total cardio session, no points, no shots, no hits, no nothing. Then comes back against Anaheim, another bottom-dwelling team, and in 16 minutes he puts up two goals and an assist and five shots. So a little bit of a roller coaster ride through these three games for Shane Wright. But overall, I am like relatively interested in what we're seeing out of Shane Wright. Yeah, the highs are high. Obviously, playing against some inferior competition there has definitely helped him. He's playing with Eberle and Schwartz at even strength, which is pretty solid. He's playing on the Bjorkstrand, Tolvanen, Beniers power play unit, which again is pretty solid. I generally prefer whichever unit McCann is on, as that's typically been their most reliable power play performer, but I'm not going to be too mad about him being on the other unit there in Seattle. Again, Seattle, one of these teams that does tend to split their units in a 1A, 1B situation. So yeah, it was definitely a 1B situation for Wright in the last game, but you could see that being a little bit different in the next one. Seattle this week, they play all heavy nights to open the week. They get Arizona on Tuesday, San Jose on Thursday, Dallas on Saturday. Then they do play on the Sunday off night against St. Louis. And then looking ahead into the final part, they do have two games. Once again, Tuesday, Thursday in the second part of week 26. That's against Winnipeg and Minnesota. So they are playing a full complement of games here. If you can fit right in on the heavy nights, then you are kind of looking at something that's a little bit interesting. I'd say he's very much like a boomer bust play at this point. There's every chance in my mind that he just kind of fades away to nothing at this point. But also, it's legitimately a good stretch for him. These three games have shown some upside, some flash. You like to see that for Shane Wright. So a bit of a boom bust play, but if, you know, if Eberle is gone, if Tolvanen is gone, if Bjorkstrand's gone in your league, if Beniers is gone, then Shane Wright, by all accounts, can definitely put himself in that echelon, at least in terms of a streaming option this week. Alex DeBrincat next up here, one assist in his last five games. It has been an abysmal run for DeBrincat, going back some way. He's not had a great stretch. He's had a couple of multi-point games, but has only scored points in, what is this, like four of his last 14, I think that is, just looking at the game log here. So it's not been a good stretch. He had zero shots against Buffalo on Sunday. He had one shot against New York Rangers in the game before that. It is not looking good for Alex DeBrincat at the moment. 17 minutes a night, that's not anywhere near elite. The on-ice numbers are atrocious. 280th in Corsi 4 per 60, 318th in on-ice scoring chances 4 per 60. That's not going to cut it. Yeah, I've had people reaching out, should I be dropping Alex DeBrincat this week? I think it's a legitimate question at this point with how poorly he's been playing. You know, we don't know everything. Maybe there's an underlying injury or something that's going on that's causing him to play this way. Maybe he's not happy with the coach. Who knows? All we know is that he's not performing in any sense at the moment. Detroit does play five games in week 26 here, with two of those on off nights. So he is probably going to get some games played for you. And it really probably just depends on who you could add. You know, for example, I think I would take Hurdle over DeBrincat, getting you those off nights, which is going to help you with flexibility in your lineup for this week. And yeah, just offloading DeBrincat, who seems hell-bent on finishing out this season miserably. Yeah, I think I might do that at this point. You got to be ruthless this time of year. Get those off nights in your lineup. I think I would go Hurdle. Yeah, I don't feel comfortable with that, but I think I would do it at this point, especially if I really needed the off nights. We talked about Blake Coleman, so we can move on to Rob Thomas. Thomas had a huge game. Has had some decent games of late for sure. He had a four-point game against Anaheim, had a two-point game against San Jose, had a point against Nashville before that. Has had some really nice run as of late, skating an unbelievable amount of minutes as well, over 22 and a half minutes over the last five games. The underlying stats never look great, especially the individual numbers for Rob Thomas. He's definitely a pass-first player. The on-ice stats look a little bit better, 157th in Corsi 4 per 60 and 79th in scoring chances 4 per 60. Basically, he's just kind of been on a heater all year long, 25 goal, 85-point pace on the season. I mean, he's just going to get the minutes. He's going to volume his way to some stats here. So I like Rob Thomas just for the pure volume at the moment. But I do think that you have to be okay with the fact that Thomas is most likely going to have a little bit of regression through this stretch. We already talked through St. Louis's schedule here. It's pretty solid with Kyrou earlier. So that part is valuable in and of itself, but I would not be surprised if Thomas doesn't have quite the same level of production here in the last part of week 26. So hopefully you use Thomas. He got you through week 25, and even if he doesn't absolutely bring home the bacon for you in week 26, he's still a decent member of your team this week, gets you a few points at least, and keeps you moving towards a championship. Svechnikov. Been a widely requested player. It's been a very interesting ride with Svechnikov. I'm so hesitant to quit this player because I do think this player is extremely talented, but it is tough to put up points when you're playing at even strength alongside Jordan Staal and Jordan Martinook. That's not where you go to score fantasy production. And they even kind of moved him off the top power play in the last game. They tried a few different things, but his most common power play line mates were Martin Nietzsche, Stefan Nason, and Evgeny Kuznetsov. That's not where we want to see Andrei Svechnikov. So I am pretty worried about it. He has still been putting up some shots, some scoring chances. The underlying stats still look pretty solid, but he's cold. He's getting deprioritized in favor of Jake Guentzel at the moment. And it's tough. It's tough at this point to really be excited about what you're getting out of him. Carolina only has four games in week 26 here. They do have three off nights, so that's helpful to some extent. But yeah, I do think you can be excused for at least thinking about moving off of Svechnikov for this week. He's got the Tuesday game, but then he does have the Friday, Sunday off nights. Yeah, it's hard to find a spot to move off him where you're getting somebody who you think is going to be significantly better. Like maybe I'm still holding on to him just for the Friday Sunday, just because what kind of better streamer are you going to find out there for the Friday Sunday if you're thinking of him in that context versus a streamer? Yeah, I'm not going to fault you for dropping Svechnikov. If you got a specific instance in one of your leagues where you're thinking about it, hit me up and let's go through the other options in your league and we can try to figure out if it makes sense. But yeah, I'm not faulting anybody at this point for thinking about or even dropping Andrei Svechnikov. Aztec in the chat here, would you consider Wyatt Johnson as a keeper over Trouba or Hintz? Roto goals, assists, plus minus PIMs, power play points. Shots on goal, hits, blocks, and seven keepers. It's an interesting point. I've been on record saying that Wyatt Johnston is going to be the 2024-2025 Dallas Stars points leader. Sticking to that take, if it comes true, then that'll be yeah, something that I'll hang up in the Louvre for sure. But I am a big fan of Wyatt Johnston. I don't know if I'm ready to hang on to him over Hintz. I think they're most likely going to be fairly comparable next year, if Wyatt Johnson's able to kind of keep up his ascendancy here, and especially if he can get on the top power play. If he can finally unseat Jamie Benn for that top power play next year at some point, even if it's not for the entire season, then that would go a long way towards really elevating Wyatt Johnston's point production potential. So I don't think it's crazy to be thinking about it. I think I still would keep hints at the moment. If you don't have to make the decision now, I'll take the easy way out and say wait for my projections to come out on September 1st. And yeah, if you can make your decision after that point, you can use some projections of mine to help you make that decision. And I'll have a better grasp on exactly how I'm feeling about that situation at that point. But I do really love Wyatt Johnson. It's more interesting conversation versus Trouba. The problem with Trouba, obviously, is that he's an absolute monster in terms of hot. Hits and blocks. PIMs provides all that in a true banger's cats where you're getting PIMs, hits, and blocks. Truba is pretty tough to beat. I think it's an interesting conversation with both these guys, but I do think that I would still keep Truba and Hintz over Wyatt Johnson at the moment. Just given the categories that you have there, the established situation for Hintz, it's very close though. Yeah, if you told me right now that Wyatt Johnson was going to get a majority of power play one time in 2024, 2025, I would take him over Hintz. I think that would be my take there. Michael Fiddler asks, how do you think Dylan Genther does this last week? Is he worth streaming for off nights? So yeah, Arizona, another good schedule. They play Tuesday on heavy night, but then Wednesday, Friday, Sunday in this early part. So let's drop in Mr. Dylan Genther into the sheet here and see what we've got the last little bit. Genther has 4 points, 2 goals, his last 5 games, skating about 60 and a half minutes a night, 69th in shots per 60, nice, 253rd in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60, not so nice, 152nd in Corsi 4 per 60, and 158th in on-ice scoring chances, 4 per 60. I like Genther, the talent. He's playing on a line with Lawson Crouse and Logan Cooley at even strength, which is not the worst thing, but it was the line that received the least amount of even strength time between all four Arizona Coyotes lines. Like, getting 2 minutes less than the Kerfoot O'Brien Carconi line is not a look that I like too much. Might just be a one-off in terms of the game that was, but yeah. Overall, I'd like to see a little bit more. The nice part about Genther is he is on the top power play and has been there for a hot minute now. Playing there with Schmaltz and Keller is a great spot for fantasy production. I like Genther still as a streamer for this week. There are definitely going to be some decent options this week. There's a lot of off nights. Obviously, we talked about Vegas. Chicago also has the same Wednesday, Friday, Sunday off nights. And we talked about St. Louis also having those Wednesday, Friday, Sunday off nights. So there's definitely going to be some options out there. But I do like Genther for the week. I will say, like, they play Vancouver and Edmonton, which are tough matchups before playing Calgary here. So it's not like the matchups are terrific on this road trip for them, and you could take that into account. But overall, I'm still interested in Genther. I'm not over the moon, I guess, is what I would say about the player there. All right, last two players. We're getting to the end here, but Shea Theodore versus Noah Hanifin is the question. And this is coming up largely because Noah Hanifin was promoted to the top power play unit in the last game against the Coyotes for Vegas. I've not seen any new power play lines here, so if you're listening to this on Tuesday, you can go check out what they did run in the game here tonight against Vancouver, and you'll have better information than I do if this was a one-off or if this is a continuing theme. If it's a continuing theme, we'll just because if Shea Theodore goes right back to the top power play, then I think this isn't even a conversation. It's Shea Theodore by a comfortable margin for me. Theodore is just proven to be a top-end point producer when he's getting top power play usage. If I had to, hazard a guess at how it goes for the rest of the season, I just don't think Hanifin is on Theodore's level as an offensive talent. Nothing that he's ever done in his career has shown me that he can be. I think he's a fine defenseman, talented enough defenseman. I don't think he's at the level of Shea Theodore. And so if I had to guess, I would say that Shea Theodore most likely takes back power play one, if not in this game tonight, then at some point throughout the 6 games that Vegas plays in week 26 here. And overall, I'd be more excited to have Shea Theodore than Noah Hanifin. If you've got Hanifin, or if he's available in your league for some reason, then definitely he's worth picking up and hanging on to, as he has the top power play deployment here. But I wouldn't be too attached to that overall. I don't think that's the most likely scenario that he's going to hang on to it. He's would probably still be useful, and in terms of if you just look at week 26 as a whole, if Hanifin gets two of those games on top power play, then that's obviously a decent enough boost to his overall point production potential for week 26. That's definitely worth being in on Hanifin at that point. So I do like both players, don't get me wrong, but overall I'd still be looking at Theodore over Hanifin, just because I do believe it's most likely that Theodore reclaims top power play and outscores Hanifin, frankly, on the 6 games that Vegas has. Last question here from FF Tyler. Oh, he made it in, squeaked it in under the deadline. Hannifin or Wendell Clark? Oh, you must be out of Red Wings, Tyler. You've come to the dark side. You've come to the Maple Leafs. I have to go with Wendell Clark, obviously. Wendell Clark, one of the greatest beauties to ever don the Leafs jersey. I'm sure you know, but Wendell Clark is the stuff of fan fiction around Toronto. So I have to go with Wendell there. All right, I think we have made it to the end of this episode, so that's going to be it. Hopefully, it brought you some value, helped you get a little bit better at fantasy hockey today. All the advanced stats you heard today came from Natural Stat Trick, which is a terrific free resource. Many thanks to the band there for supplying the music for the podcast. Be sure to check out their Spotify as well. That's it for Puzzling Players, folks. Much love.